The following programming is sponsored by Clean and Sober Media. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group.
If you need immediate help, please call the National Substance Abuse and Mental Health Hotline at 1-800-662-HELP. Welcome to Clean and Sober Radio, brought to you in part by Jefferson University Hospitals and Thomas Jefferson University, providing excellent clinical and compassionate care in the Philadelphia region, a proven leader in healthcare and education since 1825, and Acadia Healthcare, with locations on the East Coast. Acadia maintains a standard for excellence in the treatment of behavioral health and addiction concerns. And now, here are your hosts, Gary Hendler and Mark Sigmund.
Hey, thanks everybody for joining us and welcome to the show. Clean and Sober Radio features real people with real stories about addiction to drugs and alcohol. Mark, what do you have this week?
I have some really good news. I'm out of University of Houston. Researchers are saying that they may have an actual cure to the synthetic opioid crisis.
Wow.
They provided updates this week, and basically what they've come up with is an actual vaccine to block the synthetic opioids from crossing the blood-brain barrier.
Okay, so what you're saying is if this does come to fruition, this vaccine, if somebody – you know, takes heroin with fentanyl in it, it won't – there would be no effect?
They would have no effect. It would not cross the blood-brain barrier. They couldn't overdose. They wouldn't feel anything. And it's something where it's a – I believe it's a one-time thing too. They're comparing it to other vaccines. The team says that this is a – there's no question about it. This is a game changer. It produces those antibodies like for bacteria or viruses. – And it was actually backed by the Department of Defense is the one funding this.
Wow. Has it been approved yet? It usually takes a while to go through the – what is it, the FDA?
Yeah. So right now they did mice studies, which are very successful, and they're starting human studies soon.
I'll tell you who doesn't want this, the manufacturers of Narcan.
Oh, well, I mean, hopefully they still do.
I hope they do.
You know, but it's very – and, you know, this is the future. Right here. This is the future. I mean, being able to develop vaccines that block certain drugs. Now, it could get tricky because, for instance, you know, somebody, if they don't respond to something and they need fentanyl for surgery or fentanyl for cancer, they're not going to be able to use it. But this could save, you know, thousands and thousands of lives a year if this does come to fruition.
Is there any time frame on this one?
I did not read a time frame. I know they're trying to really get this out as quickly as possible. And I'm sure there's going to be conspiracy theorists because it's funded by the Department of Defense.
Sure.
Which is kind of strange. You don't expect that, you know?
Yeah.
But I've been reading about this and watching it. I've actually been watching it for over a year at this point. And it's it could be the game changer in the future. Now, the thing is people are going to think they're cured and they're just going to go to other drugs, of course. But at least getting the synthetic drugs off the table would just be huge.
I mean, has there ever been a time in our history where there have been so many vaccinations for so many different things? Look, I know the polio and all that stuff years and years in the 40s and the 50s, but it just seems now there's going to be a vaccination for everything that – everything and anything that ails you.
And you would never expect addiction, you know, a vaccine for addiction. It's actually fascinating that the antibodies would be able to see the molecules and stop them.
Great story, man. I hope it happens soon.
Me too.
Listen, we have a great show coming up. Linda Elkins is here, one of our regulars on the show, and she is going to interview, Mark, you and me. And I think our audience is going to learn a lot of really crazy stuff.
Oh, God.
We'll be right back.
This is Clean and Sober Radio.
A cancer diagnosis can knock the wind out of you. The Sidney Kimmel Cancer Center at Abington Jefferson Health can help. Our brand new Asplund Cancer Pavilion brings you 86,000 square feet of cancer-fighting science for truly comprehensive care. Backed by the strength of an NCI-designated cancer center. Call 1-800-JEFF-NOW. The Sidney Kimmel Cancer Center at Abington Jefferson Health. the power to out-science cancer.
Hi, this is Dion, the Wanderer. Listen to Clean and Sober Radio. You might hear something that'll change your life. Yo!
888-728-9941. This is Clean and Sober Radio.
We are also heard on these great radio stations, WGAC in Augusta, Georgia, WHFS Tampa, Florida, and the Big Talker 1100 WWWE in Atlanta, Georgia. Right?
All over the country.
All over the country. All right, let's start the show. Linda, thank you so much for agreeing to do this.
No problem.
All right? Mark and I are looking forward to it, and they're no holds barred, at least for me. You can ask me any single thing you want. Mark?
Yeah. And Gary, I got to tell you from the beginning, Gary's story is a lot more exciting than mine.
Well, listen. Also, I think that the thing here is people, our audience can listen to this and see, yeah, we did a lot of bad stuff, but we turned it around. And everybody has the option and to turn their addictions around.
Yeah. Yeah. Isn't that the truth? There's some hope.
Yeah. Linda,
okay.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
She's like Barbara Walters over
yes,
there.
Yes, she is.
Don't you think?
Yeah.
That's what I was
Don't
thinking.
Don't make me that old. All right. So, you know, when we tell our stories, we say what happened, what it was like, and what it's like now. So we'll start at the beginning.
Okay.
You know, we have two different generations here. Gary and I are the same generation, but Mark is way younger than us. So we're going to hear a little different story. Mark's almost 20 years younger than us.
It's a
right?
lack of quaaludes during my day.
Right. So.
He's 20 years.
Isn't he?
He's 25 years old. You're right. You're right.
I'm a good deal younger than you, Gary.
A good deal younger.
Yes, I am.
A good deal.
And Linda looks so young.
Right?
Compared, you would never even believe her age.
Compared to what?
Compared
you were going to say to me, weren't you?
Right?
All right.
Okay, so when we've gone to a lot of meetings.
Yeah.
Between the three of us. And when you go to the meetings and you hear people's stories, the thing that we get is that we felt the same way that person feels. Maybe they were poor and we were rich. Maybe we were unemployed and they were employed. Maybe they're a different ethnic background than us. It doesn't matter. We all felt the same thing. So what I hear a lot is that people knew very young that they felt different than other people. And then they had their first experience with alcohol or drugs. And that experience took them to like a euphoria. And they said, wow, now I'm not shy anymore. Now I can talk to people. Now I can do things. And that euphoria, we ended up chasing it for years. So I'd like to hear about your first time, Gary. Your first time with drugs and alcohol.
First time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the real first time. I mean, I was smoking grass in eighth grade. I never liked it.
Mm-mm.
The first time that my drug of choice got into me was 1972, and somebody gave me a Quaalude. And I think you're spot on when you said, I think, you know, I felt different. Whether I felt I looked different, I talked different, I wasn't as smart as the next guy, next girl. But when I took those Quaaludes, it was like, I'm as good as anybody else. And then I chased that for years and years and years. And, you know, it was never as good as when you first did it. I'm not saying the first time. The first, I don't know, months, years, it was never as good.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you were absolutely right when you said, you know, felt different. I felt different.
We were different than other kids in school. We felt different. We acted out. Or we were so shy we couldn't talk.
Yeah.
It was one or the other. So it didn't matter what the reason was. Everybody picked up and then felt different all of a sudden. How about you, Mark?
So growing up, you know, my mom suffered really bad depression. So there was some trauma, you know, at home. And there was sort of like this loneliness and scared and fear and the whole bit. And, you know, I first started drinking really young, probably 12 years old. You know, I have three older brothers, so I was seeing they were doing it. So I would get my friends to come over and we'd sneak beers and stuff from my dad's closet where he had a case of beer. And, you know, so that started really young, but that didn't really hit me the same as drugs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, after that, I became very much actually against drugs. You know, I would drink, but I was like, oh, drugs aren't good. And then I'll never forget the first time. The first time I smoked pot, I didn't really feel anything, and people told you that, you know. Mm-hmm. But the second time, I was like, I was instantly in love with it. You know, I was instantly like, this is going to be the answer to all my problems. You know, it was the same kind of thing that you're describing, Gary. And it was almost like shortly after that, it was almost like this void that I had before just got bigger.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this emptiness just got bigger. And I'll tell you, there definitely something happened that first time.
And then you just kept it up.
Then I just kept it up. And the funny thing is, it was the same story as a lot of us where, you know, I thought to myself, well, I'll just do it like once a month, you know, then it was once a week, and then it was once a day at the end of the day, and then it was in the morning, and then it was all the time, you know, and it pretty quickly progressed to that. And I had no idea that there was some kind of dependency going on.
Right. And, you know, when you're younger, you're hanging around a lot of other people that are drinking and using. And it seems normal, but they never went quite as far as we did. I was always took that extra step. I always did one more thing. So it was, you know.
That's a very good point. I can very clearly remember getting high, everybody else stopped. Or then the next day or next 2 days, I'd be at doctor's offices getting prescriptions, stealing the prescription pads. Right. It went to another level where the other people would get high, have fun, go home, and go to work or whatever they did, go to school.
Right. But we couldn't do that.
Couldn't do it. And, you know, you brought up about trauma. You know, the first thing, you know, I could say there was no trauma in my house.
Mm-hmm.
But then I start thinking there was trauma in my house. There's no violence. My father had a lot of mental issues. And so, you know, there wasn't violence. There was no screaming, but there was a component of mental issues with my father. So did it pass on to me in some way? Many people would say it did, but I guess I'm lucky it did not. But there was I can now think. You know, I always thought growing up in my neighborhood, it was always sunny out. It was always warm and sunny. It's not the case. You know.
Yeah. And, you know, Gary, it's when that happens as a kid, you're not getting your needs met.
Exactly.
You're not getting your needs met. And so that is the trauma of it. You know, if somebody, you know, a parent is mentally ill, you know, there's certain needs a kid needs and you know, it causes problems.
You mean emotional needs?
Emotional needs. That's what's not talked about.
Yeah.
You know, like with my mom. She was so depressed at one point. I remember being my brothers would be at school and I was the youngest. And I remember just being in the basement and being alone, you know, and watching, being scared of Count Dracula on Sesame Street.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw a therapist later and they're like, didn't you go up to your mom? And I said, no, I hid behind the couch, you know?
Oh.
And she said, well, where was your mom? And I said, I don't know. I think she was probably upstairs, like, you know, vacuuming. And she said, no, she was probably upstairs in bed.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, if you're just joining us now, Linda Elkins is here with us, one of our regulars, and she's interviewing Mark and me about how we grew up, what happened, and we'll get to what it's like today. And there'll be a lot of funny stuff, but there's a message here, and you know, the three of us, Linda, Mark, and myself, we've gone through hell, and we're lucky that we came out of it. A lot of people don't.
I mean, it's crazy when you look back and you see all the, you know, all the close calls and, you know, and how did we get through that? And, you know, I related to you, Gary, too, where like you found the Quaaludes. By the way, thank God I never found Quaaludes, but that they were gone by then. But I remember telling myself a part of this was I will when it became a daily thing, I was like, I will never, ever do any other drugs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, like that's it right there, you know, and then you start breaking your own rules.
Yep, that's right.
So we were talking about, was there alcoholism in the family? Did you have I had an uncle who had mental illness, but he also drank to excess. And there were fights, there were screaming arguments, or we would go down to the Lower East Side where one of my great uncles had a rag business. And he had the schnapps bottle hidden behind the rags, and he would pull it out when my father came. And this little uncle always had the twinkly eyes and the big red face. So was there somebody like that? Because that's how my mother knew I was an alcoholic. Because there were others in the family, and she could point to me and say, you're like them.
We never had that in my family. I mean, my parents would have parties, and their friends would come over, and they would drink a little bit. But nothing. Nothing.
Yeah, we have it pretty much all over our family.
Oh, okay.
You know, a cousin that died from the disease. And, you know, my brother is in the program. My parents, they were total moderate drinkers. Mm-hmm. I mean, my dad was a guy that would have one glass of wine with dinner.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was other scattered in other areas throughout my family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, we lived, but at what point, what made you stop? What made you realize that you were at rock bottom? What made you realize you had to do something to change? Or do you want to say what rock bottom was like? Did rock bottom last for 5 years? Were we just flailing around?
Well, for me, I knew that I wasn't leading the right life. I mean, I saw it all around me. My friends, they would get a job, they get another job, you know, and they would move on. And I was lucky I graduated from college, but I didn't do anything. As you know, I worked in the record business, and that was fuel for everything. So I was arrested multiple times for mainly forgery of prescriptions, doctor shopping, which means going to many, many doctors. And, you know, it's almost embarrassing, but it's an open show. I was arrested for an armed robbery. When did I know? One of my last arrests, the lawyer said, you better go into a rehab. Linda, I did not know what a rehab was. I had no idea, because it'll look good at sentencing. I was on welfare at that time. And I went into the Institute of Pennsylvania Hospital, the Strecker program. I was on welfare. I stayed there 3 months. And while I was in there, I am not religious at all. I do believe in a higher power, I guess. And it was just like, I've had enough. I've had enough.
I didn't understand that.
And that was – I didn't either, actually.
was somebody's phone.
And I don't know what it was, but the last time I touched anything was May 3rd, 1982. How about you?
So I have kind of a different story where, you know – it was right around 2002, and I was getting high every day. And my brother was a psych tech at this place, Building 50, in Norristown. And so I became a psych tech, you know. And, you know, that's where, like, you're checking on people that are suicidal, you're doing rounds, all this stuff. And I was getting high all the time. I was drinking all the time. And I started talking to other people that had problems. And I was like, I didn't think I had a problem at that point. You know, I started trying to help the other people in the hospital. Mm-hmm. I tried to give them advice and things like that. And there was this counselor there by the name of Mike Melcher. He wouldn't even like me using his name. And I started talking to him a little bit about it. And, you know, it was funny. I was talking to these other people and I was like, I can really relate with them. You know, I'm like, I can really, you know, relate with these guys. And I started talking to Mike about it. And at some point, he said to me, he's like, did you ever think about trying to go to NA? And that didn't go over well with me. I'm like, what are you talking about? You know, like, go to a meeting, you know? And it was one of those things where he actually let me kind of help with some of the groups and things like that. And then I started feeling like a real hypocrite. You know, I felt, you know, I was going home and pulling tubes every night and, you know, all this stuff. And I felt like a real hypocrite. But then it started to really hit me about the loss of control. Because before that, I didn't even know what addiction was. My idea of addiction was the guy that is homeless and they're living on the street and they don't have a job, you know. and you know, I had had lots of problems from drugs and alcohol, you know, fights, arrests, you know, lots of problems over the years. But I didn't think it was because of drugs and alcohol. I thought it was just life, you know. And so finally I decided to try to stop, and I would stop for a little bit. And I remember coming in tears to this counselor, you know, in absolute tears, because I couldn't stop, you know. And at that point I was ready, you know, I was ready to go to NA.
Our number is 1-888-728-9941. That's 1-888-728-9941. Why don't you give us a call and let us know your experience in the same subject. Also, if you're just listening to us, you want to watch us, go to Facebook and go to Clean and Sober Radio page, and you can watch us do the show like these incredible people. Sean Gerlot is watching. Rodney Gordon. Andrea Diaz.
My beautiful wife.
Laura Story. Hey, Gary and Mark. Have a good weekend. Keep it clean. This over. Oh, over and sober. Ted Klotz. Todd Klotz. 17 years clean and sober today.
All right.
Fabulous.
Yeah.
Fabulous. Bob Mueller. Victoria Petrowski is watching. Vicky Petrowski. Alex DeSevo, my wife, Marjorie Hendler, is watching. Joe Mazza, I think first time for Joe. How are you, buddy? Judge Andrea Duffy is watching. Stephen Sussman is watching from Florida. Jane Shapiro, this show is fascinating. There's always something new to learn about all of us and our relationships. That is really,
Thanks, Jane. Really true.
Kathy Lennon. Now, did we establish she was related to John Lennon? Do you remember the last time?
I believe we did.
I think she is related to him.
I do, too.
Okay, good. Suzanne is watching.
Hi, Suzanne.
From New England. William Atchison. Oh, I hope I did that right. Frank DeSantis. Judge Christopher Maddox is watching. We got two judges watching right now.
I know.
Melissa Masters.
We don't need him anymore.
Exactly right. And Nancy Ryder. Strawbridge is watching.
Okay. A lot of watchers.
Cool. What about gimbals? Anyway, okay. Okay, 2 minutes. Okay.
A quickie. How about the funniest?
Okay.
How about you have one funny story from when you were still using? I'll ask you a funny story in sobriety after. But do you have a really funny story that isn't tragic for while you were using?
I think it's funny. My parents probably didn't.
Okay.
My father thought that he would, you know, give me all your Quaaludes, and when you need one, I'll give it to you. Great. So he takes all the Quaaludes, and he puts them in a Maalox bottle, okay? Now, Maalox pills for your stomach look like Quaaludes. So I, of course, took all the Quaaludes and put Maalox back in those bottles, and he said to me, I'm really proud of you. You haven't taken any of these in a couple weeks. I really actually felt bad that I conned them, okay? So that was one story, you know.
I know a few more about you, but
you we'll can get them. What?
Well, I mean, it's not really funny, but
it's funny now.
It's funny to us.
This guy was down in Florida, and he was at one of those right in South Beach or something, and he was so drunk and high that he fell asleep on his bed, and there was a fire in the hotel. And
the Playboy Club in Miami.
And David Sussman.
David Sussman saved me.
Yeah, he came back to the – and he was out front. He saw all the fire engines, and they didn't think anybody was in there. And so David went up to the fireman and was like, my friend is in there. Yeah. And they were able to go up and find him.
I got the chills thinking about it and thinking of David.
And thinking of, David.
I guess it's not funny, but it
no, was, it's the insanity of it all.
Just to picture you down there. Playing, you know? I mean, I don't know, you know.
Yeah, I didn't think that's where that was going. I thought you were going to say he got a sunburn, that he fell asleep on the beach.
No. That was really funny.
Maybe I have a weird sense of humor.
I don't know. You know.
This poor guy was in the hotel.
You didn't tell us a funny story about you.
Give us a quick funny story. I don't know if I can tell us in 1 minute, but we can try. I was in Glacier National Park. We took magic mushrooms, which was I used to love those things. And with strangers that I've met on the trail in Glacier National Park. And so we hiked up the trail and we got to this one spot and I was tripping. And one of the guys and I decided to go over to this other spot because we wanted to like get up on this bluff and see some of the scenes. And we got to this spot and all of a sudden, bzz, 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 like more mosquitoes than you could ever imagine in your entire life were getting us, like everywhere, you know, and we're like, you know, hitting ourselves and all this stuff. And these mosquitoes are just, you know, and it was awful. I mean, talk about a bad trip. And I look down and there's a bottle laying on the ground and it looks like mosquito spray. And I pick it up thinking like this couldn't be full. It was a full bottle of off.
Wow.
That's amazing. That's so funny.
Phenomenal.
Serendipity.
Yeah.
That's
synchronicity.
Crazy.
I mean, like, what? Did somebody else get hit by mosquitoes and drop it there?
Mark,
and so we're jumping up and down. And
there are no coincidences.
Is that the craziest
thing? Yeah, that's crazy. That's crazy. All right, listen, we got to have to take a break. 1-888-728-9941. Come on, give us a call. Tell us some of your stuff. And then Linda's going to grill us again when we come back.
This is Clean and Sober Radio.
Diversity in the workplace is more than gender, ethnicity, and even age. It also means people in recovery. The Higher Calling Foundation works to end the stigma of substance use disorders in the workplace by helping those in recovery find jobs, get career counseling, and more. All things insurance doesn't cover, and all at no cost. And encouraging businesses to hire employees in recovery, because with the Great Resignation, there are jobs to be filled, and employees in recovery are an untapped demographic. It's mutually beneficial, and it's simply good business. Started by employment attorney in recovery Kevin Heyer, the Higher Calling Foundation believes everyone deserves a second chance and works to make that happen. And now, diversity in the workplace demands it. Visit HigherCalling.org. That's H-Y-E-R Calling.org. And find out how we can help you.
Hi, I'm Tony Luke Jr., and I listen to Clean and Sober Radio.
888-728-9941. This is Clean and Sober Radio.
If you're just joining us, Linda Elkins is interviewing Mark and myself on our journey from addiction to recovery. And I just want to reiterate, we are laughing now. Now we are laughing. And it might not be funny to a lot of our listeners and viewers.
And family members.
And family members. So, you know.
Especially yours, guys.
Yes, yeah, especially. So just take it as, you know, we're lucky. We're lucky we did what we were told to do when we got into to recovery. And the message is you can get into recovery, and you can, even if your story is one of horrors, you can lead a good life. And that's what the three of us are doing right now. Right.
Absolutely. Another poignant thing that people always point out in their stories is their first meeting. Now, my first meeting was very, very dramatic, but I'm questioning you guys. I had met a guy. I'll tell you this very short because Gary's heard it 1,000 times. I was driving my car after a dinner and I was loaded. I had left people at a restaurant, crashed into a guy. And right at 6th and Bainbridge or something, I crashed into this guy.
That's in Philadelphia.
It would have been like my third or fourth moving violation. So I start crying. I wake up out of my blackout. I'm crying and crying. This guy comes, stands next to my car. He's 6'5", 350 pounds. I'm petrified. I go for a ride in his car, and he tells me his AA story.
Ah.
And then 3 months later, I went to my first meeting.
Wow. Yeah.
He talked me into it, the guy.
Yeah.
And it was unbelievable. He was actually a prison guard from Greaterford. It was an insane story. So your first meeting was at Strecker.
Mine was at Strecker. It was Monday night, May 3rd, 1982. I was scared to go in the room. I don't know what these people were about. It looked like it was a cult of some type. Everybody's happy and it's crazy. Mm-hmm. But I remember that first night, and I remember your first meeting.
I listened to this counselor. You know, and because at that point I really felt it. You know, I saw I couldn't stop, and I went to the Plymouth meeting on the mall, 7:30 on a Tuesday night, and I sat in the parking lot for at least 10 minutes, so scared to go in. I was terrified, you know, And, you know, for some reason, it was just so hard for me to take that step to go into the meeting. You know, I felt like leaving, you know, the whole bit. And I finally went in and, you know, I survived. No, nobody, you know, and I can't remember anything that happened at that meeting, you know, but it was terrifying for me.
Yeah.
And I thought I was going to run into a lot of the people that I worked with.
Right.
Which is fine now, but then I was terrified.
I know you were terrified, but I think you have to think of this, and we weren't thinking clearly. Yeah. If you see them in there, they should feel weird seeing you in
there. Yes.
Right?
I didn't think that then, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was like the fear of, you know, and I did run into people. So,
but. I think meetings are so important, you know. I go to less meetings now. Yeah, okay. But the idea of fellowship and being with people and relating to stories and socializing, you know, because at least for me in my addiction, I didn't care to socialize with anybody unless they had the dope.
Yeah, and just being – and it's funny because like us fellow addicts, they're the same kind of person that we've loved our whole life. You know, it's just sober. You know, we always – most of us hung out with the people that got in trouble growing up, and I know I did and all that. Yes. And a lot of them became addicts.
Yes.
So
– to imagine that these strangers would help anybody that walks in the door, like you think like, why are they helping me? I don't get it. Why do they care what I do? Why do they want to give me their phone number? Like I couldn't conceive of it. And there's so much more to it than just the getting clean part, but we'll get into that part later. But – the idea of these strangers just helping us. They didn't know anything about us, but we were just like them. So it was amazing that we came out the other side. It's amazing we're alive.
Yeah, we're lucky. We're lucky.
You know?
Weren't you suspicious a little bit? I was a little suspicious. I'm like, why is everybody being so nice? You know?
I know.
You did too?
What, they don't want anything?
Yeah.
They don't want anything from me?
What do they want? Because what addicts have a transactional lifestyle.
It's a good way to put it.
That's a fantastic.
We get something from somebody and we pay them back for it. And that's what we didn't understand, people just giving friendship and love for nothing.
Yeah.
So what would be your message right now to the listener that is still suffering, that's wondering how can they get this? How can they feel as happy and funny as we are? How can they get this? What can they do?
Well, I'll say that they have to make a decision to get help. That's the first thing. They have to come to that conclusion. Nobody can force you to get help. And, you know, if you do get help, you can live an incredible life. I certainly never thought I would be where I am today. And I'm not talking about monetarily. I'm just talking about all the opportunities that I have been afforded in sobriety. And I'm no different than anybody else. I don't care where you come from. If you can make the decision to get clean, the world opens up to you.
Yeah, and along those same lines, my suggestion to people would be, even if you haven't completely come to your decision, check out some meetings. You know, there's a tradition that is the only requirement is a desire to stay clean, you know, and just go. Start opening up to people, you know, even if you haven't come to that decision yet.
You know, Todd Klotz says we were shook with fear at the first meeting. Scary.
It's scary. And it's you know, it's funny because like you don't even think twice about meetings after a little while.
No, you don't.
Like, and you don't even – I mean, I don't care who knows at this point. It just shows how isolated we were.
I was so surprised that there were people that were still drinking at the meetings. And now – we have a friend who came to our regular meeting for about 10 years. He went to two home groups with me, and one day he finally said he got it. And, I mean, when we would say the prayer at the end and hold hands, you could light a match by this guy. He was, like, all the time. You didn't know. You just didn't know. So come around. We'll tell you to keep coming back. Just come around no matter what. Even if you haven't made up your mind, you might like us so much, you might want to be one of us.
That's right.
I don't know. That's
a good point.
And Kevin Heyer says a sense of community goes a long, long way towards promoting sobriety.
Absolutely.
All right. What are some of the sayings that you love in the program? A cliche or a promise or a reward? Like, I have my favorites, but I don't want to make you have the same favorites as me.
I personally don't like them.
Okay, that's good.
That's honest right there.
That's honest.
Yeah. My favorite, yes, by all means, is One Day at a Time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just so crucial, and I stink at it. You know, this whole One Day at a Time thing. I mean, but if you can bring yourself into the moment and into today, especially in early recovery, you know, you're not worrying about tomorrow. You're just getting through today. That's my favorite.
Just stay in the day. My favorite is Don't Compare, Identify. And I didn't get it when I first came in, and it took a long time to realize we don't judge. And that's why I said in the beginning, people are different than we are, but they have the same feelings.
Yeah.
And so don't judge if somebody's different than you. Don't compare, identify. Identify with what you can with the speaker, and don't judge people at the meetings is a big one.
Keep it simple, stupid.
That's on here.
Is that on there?
Keep it simple, stupid. Exactly.
What else? I mean, I think these they're fun buzzwords, you know.
Oh, it works. Progress, not perfection.
Okay.
I mean, sometimes people get scared away. We don't want to do a fourth step, or we don't want to look at all the things we've done. And you can just – right now I tell people just stick with it till you're ready to do it. You don't have to do everything all at once.
And let me jump on that. There are set guidelines in the program – you know, with the big book and with the 12 steps. But let me tell you, I really believe no matter how you do it, there's not one way to skin this cat. No matter how you do it is good.
Exactly. There's so many ways to do it.
So many ways.
And even though there are steps, there's a wide interpretation for each one. And your sponsor can help you, or you can pick a sponsor that goes along better with your personality or something like that.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
I just how about the promises? Promises are really even better for me. My favorite is 4 and 11. You don't know them off the top of your head?
I can't remember.
I don't know.
The fourth promise is we will know peace. And I think we didn't have any peace before.
Isn't that the truth?
You didn't have that moment of zen. Like you couldn't just appreciate
the
moment you were in.
You're right. You're right.
We were running and chasing the next thing, the next high, the next drug, the next prescription.
Yeah.
We were just chasing everything. The other one that I end up – this amazes me every day, that 11, is we will know intuitively how to handle situations which used to baffle us, that we know what to do.
Listen, because we're sober, we're able, as you said, to handle situations we would never be able to handle. And guess what? Once you get clean and sober, doesn't mean your troubles are gone. I was arrested 2 years after I got sober.
Really?
And had to deal with all that. For something I did 2 years – let me make it clear. I didn't do it after – I wasn't committing crimes after I got sober. It was before I got sober. The crimes were.
Oh, so, I know a number of people that came in the program. They got sober. They're sober 18 months, 2 years. And then they go back and turn themselves in for something they did while they were still using to make their amend.
Yeah, I don't know,
I don't know if I would do that.
I wouldn't go that far.
Brad, would you do that?
No, I had a friend that did like 11 years.
Oh, I remember you.
That's a scary one. He passed away last year from COVID, but it's sad.
Let me tell you, Kathy Lennon says, been there, done that. I used to run in alleys to beat the cab bill. I just had crazy stuff when we look back. I'm Kensington.
From Kensington.
Yeah.
That's funny. I once took a cab home, and I didn't have money. So I take a cab home. They're close to my building, but I'm like, what am I going to do? I can't pay this guy, right?
Yeah, we'd like to know what you did.
We know. We drive to the next building. I had dated a guy in the other building who I didn't like.
Yeah.
So I get to there. I said, listen, if you just let me run upstairs to get you the cash, I'll give you the apartment number, the name. And I gave the name of this guy I went to high school with, and he rang that guy's buzzer. And killed – I ran out the side building and went into the other – and into my building.
Can you imagine – I mean, look at Linda now, or look at any of it. The stuff that we did was – it would be so foreign to do that now. You know, you might think to do it, but you won't do it. You won't act on it.
That's a great way to put it, because the thoughts still come.
Oh, they do.
They still come.
Thoughts still come.
Well, we talk about in the medicine cabinets in people's homes, sometimes – I just want to peek in there and see what's happening.
Exactly.
I've been clean for 40 years, but it's still in your head. You know, I was just thinking around this table, we have almost 100 years.
A lot of years. A 100. Lot. It's a long time.
Yes, it is.
To go through it. All right. So I don't know what you guys want to talk about now. We're in sobriety. We're helping other people. Gary's helping other people.
We're all helping other people.
We're all helping somebody. Do you really have to give it away to keep it? What happens if you're a person who can't give it away?
I think first thing, the thing about giving it away is it's going to get you out of your head. And most of us, probably all of us, struggle with this self-centeredness. And that's like where you get in your head and you're worrying about yourself and worrying about everything. And to be able to like actually get in service and get outside of ourself, I do believe like whether you can stay clean or not without it, I don't know. But I can tell you that you're going to be much more content in sobriety if you do give it away.
Yeah. I just want to mention again, if you're just joining us, no matter where you are, one of our regulars, Linda's here interviewing Mark and myself on our journey. We're getting to, you know, learn a little bit about Linda's also. But it's just a real honest discussion. And honest discussions were not something I was familiar with in my addiction.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Can you tell everybody about when you lived over here and you were throwing stuff off the –
So, but the visual, I mean, if they're not from around here yet, look, that was an innocent thing. There was a high-rise building near the radio station here, and it was actually David Sussman's parents lived there.
Mm-hmm.
And David and I would get on the balcony of like the 20th floor. This is like so terrible. And we would throw eggs on the cars that are stopped at the light. And I remember I could see, I think it was a guy dressed in a suit, the egg went right through his window.
Oh.
So. Is that what you wanted to hear?
I just wanted to roast you a little bit. That's all.
That was at the time it was fun.
Yeah, I'm just – is the phone ringing out there? He's probably going to be outside after the show today.
The guy?
The guy.
It's 40, 50 years
50
ago.
Years
it's
ago.
A million years ago.
A million years ago.
I lived over there too.
Presidential?
I lived in River Park. Oh, yeah. You guys were Presidential. I thought you were saying Park Plaza. I thought you were at a different –
Presidential.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's –
I have one.
Let's hear it.
How about, you know, we don't get embarrassed now because we have these discussions and we're all open and everything. But can you remember a meeting that you chaired or spoke at where there was something very embarrassing or crazy that happened? I've been to so many meetings where something crazy, crazy happens and we still conduct the meeting throughout.
I have one.
Okay.
And in early sobriety, maybe 5-3 years, I was at a meeting outside of Philadelphia in the suburbs. And it was an old meeting, you know, it's been around forever. And I started talking about drugs, and the old timers got up and walked out.
Ooh. No.
Yes.
Wow.
That's terrible.
Doesn't happen now, people.
No, I know that. I don't know if I was embarrassed or I was like pissed off. I don't know. But that was a weird thing. They just got up and walked out. But you're right. It doesn't happen now. That generation is gone.
For the most part.
For the most part, yeah. Yeah.
What about you?
So, you know, there's just some stupid stuff over the years, like people going off in the meeting and things like that. But recently I was kind of embarrassed. Recently, so my home group is, and it's kind of a trivial thing, but my home group has like 60, 70 people attending.
Oh, okay.
And my wife was recently in the hospital because of the flu and having asthma.
Mm-hmm.
And the only way I could go to the meeting was to wear a mask,
mm-hmm.
you know, and nobody else in the entire meeting wears masks. So you go in and you feel a little weird, you know, not having a mm-hmm. mask on and nobody else has a mask on. But it's kind of trivial, but I found it a little bit embarrassing.
Or just uncomfortable or embarrassing?
Uncomfortable, you know, a little bit like, you know, you're the only one. It's funny, the group dynamic of being like the only one that's not wearing one,
mm-hmm.
you know, and So when I would share, I'd be like, I'm wearing a mask because, you know, but yeah, I found it embarrassing.
I went to a meeting in the pandemic where they made us keep the mask on even though I was speaking at the meeting. And I was like, oh my gosh. The whole place, it was the church's rule, yeah. not the meeting's rule. So I had to do it. But we had – my home group was right around the corner from this radio station. We are in Philadelphia off of City Line Avenue. And we had so many crazy things happen over the years at that meeting down the street. We had somebody called the fire department once that there was a fire in the other part of the church. We kept reading the step. The firemen went through with the axes and the hoses and the whole thing.
Oh, my gosh.
We did not stop the meeting.
Wow.
We had a guy have a heart attack at the meeting. The ambulance came in. Chicky, do you remember him?
Yeah.
And he had a heart attack, flopped down on the table. We still didn't stop the meeting. We did a lot of crazy things.
All right, listen, we're going to take a break.
Take a break.
And when we come back, Linda, if you could start grilling us on maybe rewards that we've gotten.
Oh, yeah.
In sobriety. We'll be right back.
This is Clean and Sober Radio.
A cancer diagnosis can knock the wind out of you. The Sidney Kimmel Cancer Center at Abington Jefferson Health can help. Our brand new Asplund Cancer Pavilion brings you 86,000 square feet of cancer-fighting science for truly comprehensive care. Backed by the strength of an NCI-designated cancer center. Call 1-800-JEFF-NOW. The Sidney Kimmel Cancer Center at Abington Jefferson Health. The power to out-science cancer.
Diversity in the workplace is more than gender, ethnicity, and even age. It also means people in recovery. The Higher Calling Foundation works to end the stigma of substance use disorders in the workplace by helping those in recovery find jobs, get career counseling, and more. All things insurance doesn't cover, and all at no cost. And encouraging businesses to hire employees in recovery. Because with the Great Resignation, there are jobs to be filled, and employees in recovery are an untapped demographic. It's mutually beneficial, and it's simply good business. Started by employment attorney in recovery Kevin Heyer, the Higher Calling Foundation believes everyone deserves a second chance and works to make that happen. And now, diversity in the workplace demands it. Visit HireCalling.org. That's HYERCalling.org. And find out how we can help you.
What's happening? Brandon Novak here from Those Movies Jack Zor, author of that addiction memoir, Dream Seller. Do me a favor and tune into Clean and Sober Radio with Gary Hendler.
888-728-9941. This is Clean and Sober Radio.
All right, Linda. Let's talk about
the rewards.
The rewards that you and I have gotten since we got sober.
A lot. Are you looking at me?
Yeah, we're looking at you.
Okay.
We're looking at you.
It's the peace of mind, you know? It's the peace of mind of not needing another one, not needing to control my mood. It's also – the biggest thing is I have a nice little family now. You know, I have a nice little family, and I have a son that's 12 who never has to see me use anything,
yeah.
Which is – to me, it's such a gift, especially with what's going on right now. You know, mm-hmm. out there, it's terrifying. And just like being okay and not having guilt and shame and, you know, just having to worry about stuff, stupid stuff like DUIs and, you know, it's just so much more of a peaceful life, you know, and I'm also grateful for this radio show. To be on this radio show, I mean, it's just like, it's a gift, and it's a gift to be, have all these people every week that are part of the community. You know, I look forward to it, and I thank you, Gary, for that too.
Well, I thank you. We've been doing this a long time.
Yeah.
I thank goodness for my family, and I, you know, I'm thinking, you know, addiction is a lie. You know, like when you're not addicted, you don't have to think of anything because you know, when you tell a lie, you got to think.
Yeah.
Well, the whole addiction thing was a lie. Because you had to cover yourself. You had to think what you said. What did I do last night? So I'm glad I don't have to do that anymore. I've been very fortunate to get some things. This might sound like really trivial stuff, but some rewards to recognize my sobriety. I got a presidential pardon in 2021 from Donald Trump. And most recently, I was appointed board of director to a prison outside of Philadelphia, Montgomery County. And so, you know, when you get sober, a lot of good things can happen, you know, and a lot of bad things can happen too, because it's life. We're still just living life, but we're not getting high. That's what I think.
Yeah, it's It's unbelievable, you know, and for anybody that's trying to get this thing, just knowing, like, you know, the beginning's hard, you know, it's really hard, you know, getting through that beginning part, but you turn a corner and you know, there's so many gifts that you get.
Right. Hey, Brian Morton, we're glad he's checking in with us. Kathy Lennon says, I'll be 45 years sober in April, God willing.
Awesome.
Came around in 74, but got sober for the last time. You didn't get sober for less. You got sober. It says, I got sober for the last time in 1978. No, you started to get sober in 78.
Mm-hmm.
That was just a funny thing. Ron Shippert Jr. is watching. Did I say that right?
You probably botched it.
I probably did. Todd Klutz, you guys are making me feel good again. It's good to hear about you and your stories. You're being real, and I appreciate it. Hope Cornfield Bessler, Jack Sharkey, Susan Garber Pisano. There's so many. We can't get to everybody.
One of the big rewards, and I'll say this about family and genetics, is that Gary and I are happy to see our children sober now. And that is a reward, a double reward. We suffered a lot with not knowing it was going to happen, and we suffered through it, and now it's a blessing to have more sober people in our family.
Well, I was lucky. My kids never saw me high.
Oh, Ben never saw me high either, but I'm saying now they're sober, your daughter, my son. They're sober, and they're living the life.
And because
they go to meetings.
Yeah, I mean, because they've, you know, they were brought up in this. You know, now that doesn't, you know, being brought up does not exclude you from using, because, you know, you hear a lot of people say, my father, I swore I was never going to be a drunk, and it happens. So, yeah, we are fortunate, and we hope for you that your son, because he knows, you know, what went on, he stays clean.
Yeah, I really, really hope so. It's so terrifying when you know that the genes in your family, and I'm sure there's a lot of people listening that are terrified about that too. I was actually happy to hear about this possible vaccine for fentanyl.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah.
You know, if that comes out, because it's just so scary. I mean, with the situation out there right now, you know, everything laced.
It's, you know, I feel so fortunate that I had my addiction so long ago, because no matter what I did, people didn't die.
It's true.
I didn't know. I never heard of anybody dying, I don't think, from a heroin overdose. I wasn't in that crowd.
Me neither.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, even in the, you know, 94, 95, 96, mm-hmm. you know, it was and you know, I never dreamed, like, there would be batches of fentanyl coming through, but you never mm-hmm. dreamed it would all be fentanyl.
For sure. Never. I mean,
all be fed.
And this new stuff out
there. Trank.
It's yeah.
The even worst. The name, Trank.
Yeah.
It's scary.
It really is. And, you know, the sores people get. And
oh, yeah. We saw those pictures.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's awful.
Hey, listen, guys. You got about 3 minutes if you want to call in. 1-888-728-9941.
Yeah.
It's a good show.
Yeah,
right? Linda, you did a great
job. You sure?
Yes.
Hey.
Barbara Waters.
All right, you guys. Yeah. I don't know.
You're the next Barbara Waters.
You know what I did Monday night? Monday night, I was at the Lower Merion Police Department getting a Narcan training, and we received free Narcan, and the Narberth ambulance people trained us on what they do, that they won't arrest people for their little bags of stuff. If they're not dealers, nobody will be arrested for calling an ambulance. And they're very much that people should have Narcan and know how to use it. And they told us what it would work on and what it didn't. It was a very good training, and that's part of the program Gary put in place with all these local police departments, that they had to carry Narcan and train people. So we're very proud of Gary's accomplishments, and we're still benefiting from them.
Oh, well, listen, here's the old cliche. If it wasn't for you guys, seriously, we all do our part. You know?
I mean, you should have seen the award that he got earlier this year, and Tony Luke spoke, and it was just – it was awesome. It was awesome in Lansdale from Dara.
Oh, yeah.
That's Judge Duffy.
Judge Duffy,
our favorite judge.
He's our favorite. Well, we like Chris Maddox too, but Andrew's
we love Chris. Linda, thank you so very much. We'll see you soon
anytime.
Again. Mark, Brad, Wes,
Barry.
Thank you so very much.
Oh, Wes.
Wes
is
– No, he'll be here next week.
Okay.
Remember, if you or a loved one is struggling with addiction, help is available. Please call 1-800-662-HELP. 1-800-662-HELP. For Clean and Sober Radio, I'm Gary Hendler.
I'm Mark Sigmund.
Linda Elkins.
Thank you for listening. To learn more about this broadcast, please join us on our mission at cleanandsoberbroadcasting.com.
Everybody wants to shine.
I'd like to say thank you on behalf of the group and ourselves. I hope we pass the audition.
Tries to bring you